From National Public Radio in Washington, I'm Susan Stamberg with All Things Considered.
This is Art Cohen in Manchester, New Hampshire, and on tonight's All Things Considered, I'll be reporting on the significance of next Tuesday's primary.
Primaries in New Hampshire will be followed by primaries in Florida, where one of the Democratic candidates has been winning much popular support.
He speaks for the little people. He speaks for us. He always has. He always will. Walz is the only one that speaks the truth, as far as I'm concerned.
Tonight on All Things Considered, supporters of George Wallace discuss the reasons for their support. Also tonight, a conversation with an electronic music virtuoso, two black women with advice on how to get along with members of their race, and a report on some New York school children involved in experimental education. We begin with a summary of the major news stories of the day. Here's Rich Adams.
At the request of Attorney General Designate Richard Kleindienst, the Senate Judiciary Committee will hold a new hearing tomorrow at which Kleindienst will testify on his purported role in settling an antitrust case against International Telephone and Telegraph Corporation. Chairman James Eastland said columnist Jack Anderson, who wrote about the ITT case, will also appear. Anderson had said that ITT won a favorable settlement after a subsidiary pledged up to $400,000 to help finance this year's Republican National Convention in San Diego. Kleindienst had been approved by the Judiciary Committee as Attorney General to succeed John Mitchell. He says he wants the new hearing just to set the record straight. There's word that two more top Justice Department officials will follow Attorney General Mitchell out of the department and into President Nixon's re-election campaign. Mitchell's resignation to head the campaign became effective today. Assistant Attorney General Robert Mardian and Jerris Leonard, who heads the Law Enforcement Assistant Administration, are expected to step down soon. Consumers won a major victory in the Supreme Court today with a ruling expanding the power of the Federal Trade Commission to move against deceptive or unfair merchandising. Barry Schweid has details.
The question before the court in a case concerning S&H green stamps was whether the commission may act only when there seems to be a violation of antitrust law. Not at all, said Justice Byron White. The commission may order a halt to a deceptive or unfair business practice regardless of its effect on competition. It has the right, White said, to consider public values beyond those in the letter or the spirit of antitrust laws. This may be the wedge the commission has been seeking to move against all sorts of shady trade practices. But since the commission did not challenge a lower court's finding clearing S&H of antitrust violations, the ruling did not go against the trading stamp company. However, the commission did win its bigger point, that it has the right to protect the housewife and other consumers on a broad legal basis. The court also took up school desegregation at a hearing. This time, the issue was whether southern cities surrounded by heavily black rural areas may carve out their own separate systems. The cases are from Halifax County, North Carolina, and Greensville County, Virginia. The Justice Department is backing the blacks by contesting the separation. But the justices appeared impressed with the argument of lawyers for school districts that their purpose was quality education and not racial segregation. For National Public Radio, this is Barry Schweid.
While the Supreme Court considers desegregation, that issue was also very much on the minds of the Senate today as it passed a $23 billion aid to education bill after rejecting all attempts to add tough anti-busing amendments. Linda Wertheimer was on Capitol Hill for the vote and has this report.
The anti-busing forces in the Senate made one last effort today, a dramatic last-minute attempt to restore to the bill the Griffin Amendment, which the Senate had voted down on Tuesday. The amendment lost again by a close vote of 47-48. The amendment originally proposed by Senator Robert Griffin of Michigan would have stripped the courts of the power to order busing as a tool to achieve racial balance in schools. The amendment introduced on the floor today, after debate had ended, just before vote on the final passage of the bill, was called the Griffin-Baker Amendment, combining the Griffin Amendment with one introduced by Senator Howard Baker of Tennessee, which would strike out of existing law the provisions that federal money can be withheld from schools which fail to comply with integration orders. The amendment was proposed by Senator Robert Dole, the chairman of the Republican Party. As Senator Dole rose to a parliamentary question on his amendment, and the chair recognized him, it was Vice President Agnew, presiding over the Senate, on hand to break a tie vote on the controversial anti-busing amendment, should it be necessary. Senator Griffin had said yesterday that it was clear there could not be a majority against busing in this Senate, and the question as to why Senator Dole tried again might be answered two ways. As chairman of the Republican Party, Senator Dole might have been restating the support of the administration for the Griffin Amendment. But apart from the philosophic considerations, Senator Dole said after the vote that he thought there might be a chance today that had not been there on Tuesday. On counting the House, Senator Dole noticed that Senator Stafford of Vermont was not present today.
Well, I knew he was sick, and I hadn't checked. I knew he had missed the first three or four votes, and I knew Senator McGee was probably in Las Vegas. And I thought there were a couple of others out of town, but they showed up. Hartke and Jackson weren't here, and we thought they might want to be recorded on the vote, but they're still not here. They've missed the vote twice, and we thought McGovern was going to leave earlier than he did. So it's hard to tell with the plane schedules like they are and so many candidates. But we thought it was worth the effort. At least those who favored some form of the Griffin Amendment could vote yes, and those who were opposed could vote no. And the voters would know that some have voted for twice and some have voted against it twice. And some have still not voted at all.
The busing issue is temporarily quiet now, but as Senator Dole pointed out, the Senate bill must go to conference with a House bill that takes a strong position against busing, and the two must be resolved. And the President, Senator Dole said, will also probably be mentioning busing once or twice in the near future. This is Linda Wertheimer.
Defense Secretary Melvin Laird says the Army is no longer spying on civilians in any way. Laird said he stopped the Army's surveillance of civilians, begun by President Johnson at a time of civil disorders in 1968. Secretary Laird also said he hopes to cut the nation's draft to 50,000 men this year, with his goal an all-volunteer force by mid-1973. In the tradition of their mountaineer forefathers, the people of Logan County, West Virginia, are fighting back today against the ravages of nature. The first of 14 mines near Mann, West Virginia, reopened today, many of the workers reporting to the shafts just after attending funerals for many of those killed by a devastating flood on Saturday morning. The area of the Buffalo Creek Valley was devastated by the flood from a collapsing earthen dam, and Joanne Levine of the Christian Science Monitor arrived on the scene just hours after the flood. She returned to her office in New York today with her impression of the disaster.
People described it as a 20-foot high wall of water, and just parts of the valley are just smeared flat. There's just nothing. Many of the houses are, if they're still recognizable as houses, are slammed into each other. The coal trucks, or the coal cars, which were on the railroad tracks, if they were full of coal, they weren't moved. But if the tracks were empty, the tracks seemed to have been uprooted.
Impressions of the flood disaster in Logan County, West Virginia, from Joanne Levine of the Christian Science Monitor. FBI informer Boyd Douglas said today a letter he carried out of prison for the Reverend Philip Berrigan mentioned destroying heating tunnels in Washington, D.C. Boyd said the letter was addressed to Sister Elizabeth McAllister. Berrigan, Sister McAllister, and five other anti-war defendants are on trial in federal court in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Charges against them involve not only plans regarding the tunnels, but an alleged plot to kidnap presidential aide Henry Kissinger. And in San Jose, California, jury selection is continuing in the trial of black militant Angela Davis. With the nation's first primary election in New Hampshire just a week away, the pace of campaigning has picked up. Here with a report on the continuing battle between one candidate and the local press is Jim Russell.
Candidates, campaign workers, and reporters were out in their sport jackets and shirt sleeves today as the temperature soared to 63 degrees outside, making the small piles of snow along the roadway look sort of silly. It was truly extraordinary weather for this, the last week of the primary campaign here in New Hampshire. Democratic frontrunner Edmund Muskie returns to the state late this evening, and he arrives to face what one influential reporter calls an erosion in his strength in New Hampshire. The reporter is David Broder of the Washington Post, who says that voter interviews conducted over the past 4 days show that Senator Muskie could receive an embarrassingly low percentage of the vote this coming Tuesday. Among the items Broder says are hurting Muskie, Muskie's failure to match the personal campaign efforts of rivals like Hartke, Yorty, and McGovern. And David Broder says the attacks against Muskie by conservative newspaper publisher William Loeb have had an impact. There was another of those front-page editorials against Muskie in this morning's Manchester Union Leader, Loeb calling Muskie hysterical and deceptive, and the Union Leader printed for a second time the article from Newsweek, which described Jane Muskie, the senator's wife, in unladylike terms. Elsewhere in New Hampshire, the Committee for the Re-election of the President is gearing up for its Appreciation Day rally on Friday, which will feature cabinet members, congressmen and senators, and Lainey Kazan boosting Nixon. Rumor has it that the president will make his first and only appearance of the campaign in New Hampshire on Friday, but the Nixon campaign office here in New Hampshire flatly denies this. This is Jim Russell reporting.